Johnny Ketch Show, John Cobalt and Ken Champeau. It's KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
Yeah, all right. That's the word, live. Thanks for that. Welcome, everybody, to another big show. We will continue to look at the ballot propositions today. We're up to Proposition 17, which, when you look at it, brings up a question. Do you know the difference between probation and parole? Anybody? No. Okay. Well, Proposition 17 is going to give people on probation. They already have the right to vote, but it's going to give people on parole the right to vote. And probation is part of the original sentence when the judge hands down the sentence to criminals. They are often told that they will be put on probation upon their release. Whereas parole is a situation where if you get released from prison early, you're considered on parole. And in California right now, you are not allowed to vote if you are on parole.
So
people
if you
have the right to vote, but if this passes, yeah.
If you screw up on probation, you get thrown in jail to serve your sentence. If you screw up on parole, you get thrown back into prison.
Yes. Anyway, Prop 17 is about giving people who are on parole the right to vote. And it's just expanding the number of people that are out of prison, their chances to vote again. And we're going to have a guest at 5 o'clock, the campaign manager for Yes on Prop 17. We are a no on the ballot guide simply because, with the way they're releasing everybody from prison these days, it looks like what they want to do, too, is line up their votes. So you can check out our ballot guide at KFI.
Well, you'd have people on parole for murder being allowed to vote. That's a conflict of interest, isn't it? You're going to vote for the candidates that encourage more of that sort of thing.
That's true.
Instead of being punished and removed from society for what they've done, now they're given a perk to help shape society.
Yeah, parole is granted by a parole board after the offender has served some or maybe a lot of the time they were sentenced to. All right, so that's different. Probation is handed down by the judge at trial. It could be in lieu of jail time or in combination with some jail time. So in other words, when you get probation, it's part of the original sentence, and that's probably why they gave those people the right to vote, because that was already determined by a judge. Whereas parole is a special thing, and they've been doing more and more of that to let guys out of prison early, and you go through the parole board. And as John mentioned, in some cases, they may not all get through. The governor has been trying to get murderers out of prison early.
And he has. He's gotten them out. He's gotten murderers out. So now the murderers are out, and they may be on parole, and now they get to vote. That cancels out your vote.
Anyway, we'll bring up Prop 17 later on in the show. One of the big stories today that we're going to talk about in more detail in an hour is these Michigan militia members who had a plot to kidnap the governor. We talked a lot about Gretchen Whitmer months ago because she put some of the tightest COVID-19 restrictions on the public of almost any governor.
First thing I thought about her is that she wanted to ban people from sailing on boats, driving boats. And then her husband called a marina and tried to book a boat on the side saying, hey, I'm the governor's husband. You know, maybe I can get a break. So that shows you what kind of fakes and phonies these people are. The wife is the governor, and she's shutting down boating. The husband is calling up to get a waiver on that.
What I remembered about her with the restrictions is, and I remember I jolted when I saw this months ago, that she didn't want people to go from home to home.
Yeah.
In other words, she was going to prohibit people from driving from one house to another because that would be cross-contamination of households.
Yeah.
You had a grandma or an aunt on the other side of town. You wanted to go check on them. Uh-uh.
Yeah. Extreme control freak.
Not sure you could enforce that one, but that was her restriction.
This is like Garcetti trying to ban people from touching each other's tennis balls.
And then
that kind of freak.
we know there was a group that stormed the Capitol building some months ago. There were protests all over the place at the Capitol building in Michigan. All of this seemed to fade away and die down a bit. And then today's announcement that six men conspired to abduct Governor Whitmer. Another seven people were arrested on state anti-terrorism charges involved with the plot. They were trying to instigate a civil war.
Now, we predicted this yesterday, right? What did we say
yesterday?
It was a
poll we were looking at, yeah.
But no, I'm convinced that there were, no matter how the election turns out, there'll be some kind of civil war right after the election. And look at this. Next day, they were already plotting one in Michigan. And this is why, by the way, they will never, ever pass real gun restrictions in this country. They'll always talk about it. They'll always go on television and emote about it and try to manipulate and try to raise money. They'll never actually do it. It's because of these guys. Because these guys have the guns, and if you push these guys too far, then they start their conspiracy plots. And they're all dangerous, and they all should go to prison, but this is not surprising. When you saw those rural people coming out of the woods in Michigan over Gretchen Whitmer's various restrictions, you can only push people so far, and there's a certain sliver that are completely out of their minds. And the politicians mostly know it, which is why they never actually ban guns in any meaningful way, because they know that then you get this response. So they just talk a lot.
The plans included maybe abducting her at her vacation home, taking her to some remote location to stand trial for treason. Another plan was to get 200 men to storm the Capitol building in Lansing, take hostages, which could include the governor. So I guess they had a two-pronged plan, depending on where she was on the day they wanted to spring into action.
And then do what with her?
They also suggested knocking on the door. When she answers it, just cap her.
If they were going to take hostages in exchange for not having to wear masks, what did they think was going to be done?
It's treason. Do you understand? It's not just about masks.
It's a complete betrayal
of the country.
That's the first thing I thought of. It's like, okay, now they've got this woman tied up, this governor, and in return, they'll release her if what? I mean, it doesn't seem like they were trying to get rich off this. They weren't asking for money.
Then what do you know? The investigation was sparked by social media posts bragging of plans to violently overthrow a number of state governments.
These guys are so dumb, which is why these plans never go anywhere. Because they start talking. One of them became an FBI informant.
Well, how are you going to recruit people if you don't go out there and talk, I guess, is the theory, right? How are you going to get other guys to join your movement?
You can't do it publicly.
You shouldn't do it on you're supposed to, law enforcement, and there's people that tip off law enforcement if they see something nutty.
That's what basements are for. That's what the phone is for. You call Bob up and say, hey, we got a big meeting. Come to my basement.
What, are you giving tips now?
Well, what's
going on in your basement?
If you wanted to overthrow a government, would you put it on social media? Hey, why don't we overthrow the government? I'm the dumbest thing in the world.
Oh, it's
whisper quietly.
Guys with big ideas, masters of their own universes, that want to announce to the world that
I'm thinking big.
I'm really thinking big here. I'm a doer. I'm not like you on the couch eating your potato chips and watching your baseball playoffs, John. I'm in there doing something.
Yeah, well. If you're going to do something, you do it right. You don't go on the internet and tell everybody.
I will get the details next hour from Mark Remillard, ABC News for KFI. When we come back, of course, the other big story is Trump says thumbs down about a virtual debate. I'm not going to sit in front of some computer. That's not a debate. That was the announcement this morning from the Presidential Commission on Debates, that the next debate, which is a week from today, would be held remotely.
What's this about? What was this suddenly demanding a virtual? The virtual everything should be ended.
Trump is ill. You can't be near him. He's toxic.
Take the tests.
Those tests are faulty.
When he clears the test, then he can go.
Looks like Trump had a negative one and he was positive, or maybe it hadn't converted to positive yet.
Well, we'll talk more about it.
Of course, he's telling everybody he's not contagious anymore.
Well, it's simple.
I'm not a doctor, but I know.
The standard is you get two negative tests in a row, then you're in the clear. So just use that standard. There's no reason to turn it virtual when it's what it's. When was this thing going to be? Next week? Next Thursday?
1 week from today.
All right. Well, you can't do a test today and Saturday and Sunday and Monday? I don't get it. It's a fake issue.
All right. We'll talk more when we come back.
Did you see the post by one of these wannabe kidnappers?
No.
Of the Michigan governor? Gretchen Whitmer, you may have heard that they've got 13 guys who were plotting to kidnap her. And one guy's named Brandon Caserta. And he had one set of pictures captioned, "What Your Face Mask Says About You." Four women wearing masks with demeaning messages superimposed on them. One of them said, "I'm an obedient slave who obeys their master's commands. The government has authority over my body," says another. Another post, "Apparently I cannot go more than a month or two without getting robbed by government thugs for some made-up traffic violation. They robbed me for going around someone who was turning left at a blinking yellow light on a one-lane effing road." So if you support the police, then you support immoral criminal theft, and I don't give a bleep how that makes you feel, because you need to wake the hell up. So he was an anti-police guy, as well as being an anti-mask guy.
Yeah, because they were talking about killing police, too. In their way.
These are young guys, too, in their 20s.
Yeah.
This is a new generation.
Isn't this the reverse of the flip-flop of the Antifa young guys?
Yeah.
Both wanted to create chaos and, I guess, civil war, but coming from, I guess, different perspectives.
Right. But it's the same guy.
It's the same guy. They're all bored and unemployed.
Yeah, that's what's driving this. None of these guys have any jobs.
I'm convinced. And I heard that even video games aren't good enough now. They want to get out there and just mess around.
I mean, how many years could you do that? I've always wondered. I mean, I understand enjoying video games, but some of these people, it consumes their life every day for years on end, morning to night.
I've heard that faded a bit with the slightly younger next generation, that was a big deal 10 years ago, but now we get the 20-year-old today. Maybe not. I don't know. I've read that it's not quite as big as an obsession.
Maybe. That's why they're storming to play real war games.
They want to get in the streets and break windows and overthrow governments.
The Wolverine Watchmen Militia Group.
Wow. Remember, that was big in the 90s, the militias, and we had Tim McVeigh blow up the Oklahoma City building.
That's back.
That was the militia thing.
25 years later, new generation.
The survivalist guys that believed in the UN takeover.
It's all the same people.
I still get emails from people about the UN agenda.
Well,
Johnny, Ken, read this. It's all part of the UN agenda. Whatever you talk about, I don't know, George Soros or Garcetti.
They have the guns. Got to listen to them.
All right, President Trump got up early today. Well, he always does. He went on Fox Business, and this time he's talking to Maria Bartiromo. And they say this is his first real interview since being treated for coronavirus. And he's responding to the Commission on Presidential Debates, who announced that next week's showdown, 1 week from today, October 15th, will be virtual. But I didn't know. Did you know, John, that the third debate between Nixon and Kennedy in 1960, they were in different places?
I heard that.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Kennedy was in New York and Nixon was in Los Angeles.
I think Kennedy was in Washington, I read. Maybe. Maybe he was in New York.
Well, they were in separate studios.
Oh, yeah. Nixon was in L.A., yeah. So, which that must have been interesting, because did they see each other or on monitors, I guess?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the technology obviously was primitive.
All right, so here is Trump announcing that no go.
I beat him in the first debate. At the second debate, we have a never Trumper as a host, but that's okay because I beat him in the second debate also. But I'm not going to do a virtual debate.
So, Mr. President, you're not going to do it because the CPD, the Commission on Presidential Debates, announcing this morning that the second presidential debate will be virtual. Are you saying you're not going to participate?
No, I'm not going to waste my time on a virtual debate. That's not what debating's all about. You sit behind a computer and do a debate. It's ridiculous. And then they cut you off whenever they want. I have a host who I always thought was a nice guy, but I see he's a never-Trumper. You know, came out that he's a never-Trumper. We do have some of them, Maria, believe it or not, because they don't like to win.
So you just learned this morning?
Yeah, we learned it the same way you learned it. They called up 2 minutes ago, and it was announced. And they're trying to protect Biden. Everybody is. They're trying, like that NBC disaster where he went on the show with Lester Holt. It was like it was meant for a child. It wasn't meant for a grown person. He gets up and he says, "We're not fracking. We're not fracking." He was fracking for 6 months. He was fracking. He was raising his very thin hand, and he was fracking. And now all of a sudden he's not fracking. Well, tell the Pennsylvania people that you're going. It's ridiculous. He said he's not fracking. That's all he said. And then all of a sudden he goes to a fracking right. mode. And how about her? She committed her life to it. And all of a sudden she's a fracker. She's a big fracker. They're going to stop fracking the minute they get into office. They're lying to everybody. They're lying about so many different things. But you have to confront people. You can't do it.
I want to talk to you about that. I want to talk to you about what you heard last night. But Mr. President, you say you're not going to do this debate. Address the criticism, Mr. President, the criticism that you removed your mask for a photo op. You got to the top of the steps. You removed it. People are worried about your recent diagnosis. Now you've got 30 plus people with coronavirus in and around the White House. Address that concern for us, Mr. President. As you tell the Commission on Debates, you're not going to do this virtually.
Yeah, well, first of all, I think I'm better when to a point where I'd love to do a rally tonight. I wanted to do one last night. But I think I'm better to a point that I feel better than I did, I jokingly said 20 years ago. I feel perfect. There's nothing wrong. I had a case. I got it knocked out. I think it was Regeneron that was responsible for it. Because of that, it was sort of like almost a gift from heaven because of what I went through, and I had I felt pretty lousy. A lot of people did. A lot of people do. You know, no matter how good the security, you're not going to protect yourself from this thing with just your standard anything, unless you just literally don't come out. And even those people found out. Did you see in New York City, the most heavily locked down place, the people that caught it the most were the people that were caught in their houses and their apartments, okay?
All right, so, well, I had read that he was pretty hyped up. She sounds over-caffeinated, though. I always think that Maria Bartiromo sounds a little bit hyper.
She's excitable.
Yeah. By the way, the next debate is Steve Scully. He mentioned him there. He's with C-SPAN. And Trump referred to him as an anti-Trumper. He wasn't happy with the moderator.
A never-Trumper, which is a Republican who says they will never vote for Trump.
Yeah, which, I don't know, I'm looking at his background.
That's the establishment Republicans.
Do you know he started in the mailroom for Joe Biden? He was a mailroom intern for Joe Biden back in 1978. How about that?
Yeah, that means he must be 100 years old, too.
He's born in 1960. So
yeah. Well, 60. I think a virtual debate over a screen is ridiculous. I think they should
mix it up. I think you're right.
A
lot will be lost in the interpretation and, I guess, the energy of it.
Yeah, and the spontaneity of it. And they should get in each other's faces. This was going to be a town hall debate. I don't know if they were going to be walking around the stage like he and Hillary did. But you want the spontaneity. You want aggression. I watched last night. I tried to. It was horrible. Boring.
I did not even watch the whole thing.
Trump was too much in his debate 2 weeks ago. But the ones he did 4 years ago, it's exactly what you want to see. You have to, when somebody's lying, and most politicians are lying, you have to immediately have somebody jump in and say, no, that's a lie. Here's why it's a lie. You have to. You can't let him answer for 2 minutes. He stacks up six lies. You can't even remember them all. And then you're supposed to address their lies, and the moderator's saying, no, you have to answer the same questions. I don't want to answer the question. I have to address the six lies that guy just told. So it's better to do it in real time and interrupt them. I don't understand the formality of these things. I really don't. Last night was a dud, a snooze.
Yeah, we'll get to the debate a bit
learn
later
nothing.
On. When we come back, we just learned something about the ballot proposition we're going to talk about on today's show, Proposition 17, which will restore the right to vote for parolees. Oh, yeah. An interesting name just popped up next.
John and Ken Show, John Cobell, Ken Champo. KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
Yeah, the Moist line is coming back tomorrow. 1-877-MOIST-86. We still got room for your calls. 1-877-664-7886. Well, we just found this out, even though it was a story months ago. I didn't notice it. One of the ballot propositions you will see when you look at your voting ballot is number 17, which we'll be talking about later on in the show today with the yes and the no sides coming on. It is going to give people who are on parole the right to vote. People on probation already have the right to vote, but if this proposition passes, those on parole will do. As we explained at the beginning of the hour, those on parole are actually given an early release. And of course, it's generally approved by the parole board, but technically they're still under the state's criminal supervision. Anyway, the proponents behind this said that it says here, legislation already gave the rights to people that have misdemeanors the right to vote, but now the people who have felonies that are on parole, we want them to get the right to vote. And apparently their next idea, yeah, it is.
It's incremental. That's why I always tell you, be aware of incrementalism. They'll say, oh, it's just a teeny little change, but they have a list from here to the moon of their teeny little changes.
They would like to see those who are still in jail be able to vote. That's their next
right. So plan. You could actually kill people, depriving those people of their ability to vote, but you'll be able to. You could kill a voter and still keep your right to vote under this long-term plan.
This next story is a real good reason, besides John and Ken saying to vote no on Prop 17. It's well, if you're a longtime listener to the show, because the story goes back more than 10 years, this person is in favor of Prop 17. Here's the story from ABC 7.
31-year-old Esteban Nunez is part of the Yes on Prop 17 campaign and believes voting is a way to accept former inmates back into society. Nunez, the son of ex-California politician Fabian Nunez, served 7 years for his role in the 2008 stabbing death of Luis Santos, a 22-year-old college student. Nunez was supposed to serve 16 years, but had his sentence reduced by Governor Schwarzenegger on his last night in office. The controversial move resulted in a lawsuit, and Schwarzenegger admitted it was a favor for the former assembly speaker.
When I came home, I felt like I was really just in tune with current events. I was really up to speed on what's been going on around the world, and was really actually looking forward to voting.
That's when Nunez's parole officer told him he couldn't vote, and Nunez missed the 2016 election but was off parole in time to vote in the 2018 midterms. California is one of only three states that requires people convicted of felonies to complete both prison and parole sentences before regaining their right to vote.
So many people that are in prison have just endless potential. And that reminded me just of myself, that we're in these circumstances that they couldn't escape and made horrible decisions, but doesn't define who they are as individuals.
They're interested in more votes, and there's a greater likelihood that a criminal is going to vote Democratic than Republican.
Hold on a second. Esteban Nunez, in case you didn't know, you forgot, helped kill a young man, Luis Santos, who has never been able to vote. Because he's underground. He's dead. We had his parents on several times. It was a dreadful, awful tragedy. And Esteban Nunez is, well, I was reading papers every day. I was getting in touch with the world. I was excited about voting. Why? Just spend any time reflecting on how you killed a guy?
Case for people that don't know, Fabian Nunez and his gang of thug friends were hanging out one night looking for trouble. And they ran into Luis Santos, the college student, and there was a bit of a rumble, and Santos was stabbed to death.
Yeah.
It was never 100% clear who did the stabbing, but Nunez helped throw away evidence.
Yeah. Yeah.
Clothing.
They had bloody clothing, and there was a knife involved, obviously. And Nunez was involved in covering up the evidence, disposing of the evidence. His father was this dirty, sleazy assembly speaker. He hooked up with dirty, sleazy Schwarzenegger in 06 to pass the greenhouse gas bill, which has cost us billions of dollars, has not reduced greenhouse gases significantly, has not lowered the temperature of the planet. It just gave the government billions of dollars. And Schwarzenegger, on his last night in office, gave a commutation to Esteban Nunez. He didn't do it while he was governor because he didn't want to deal with the backlash. And he did it as a favor to sleazy dad, Fabian.
So it went from 16 years to 7 years, thanks to Schwarzenegger, and then it got reduced to 6 years because of good behavior.
And
Fabian Nunez got out of prison in 2016.
Schwarzenegger was tailed by some of the media back when the media cared about covering the right stories. He would never say a word about this. He shut everybody down, never apologized, never talked to the parents. I mean, this absolutely, I mean, there was two horrible devastations for the Santos parents. First, their son gets killed brutally. And secondly, one of the killers gets off because his dad was friends with the governor. It was the most shameful, most disgusting chapter in Nunez and Schwarzenegger's careers. And both of them are pretty sad.
Yeah, apparently the appeals court said in 2015 that it's obvious backroom dealings were apparent in this.
Oh, it's a filthy, foul deal. And now,
remember, Schwarzenegger said, this is what you do for a friend.
And now Esteban Nunez is going around as the spokesman? And now he's telling us, oh, wow, yeah, I was reading the newspapers. I want to vote. Well, Luis Santos can't vote. How was it to watch him die in the street? Or did you run away? Did you watch him bleed to death or did you run away? How much fun was it hiding all the bloody clothes? Good Lord. I read three papers every day.
So there's your strong reason if you're a John and Ken show listener. I'm going to go vomit. On Prop 17.
Hey, he's a sociopath like his dad. You could see that sociopath is like brain damage, and it's passed genetically from father to son.
All right, we got more coming up.
John and Ken show, John Cobell, Ken Champeau, KFI. AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
All right, we'll talk about those crazy militia guys in Michigan who had a plot to kidnap the governor. That's right up after 3 o'clock with Mark Remillard from ABC News for KFI. You know, there's a lot we're going to have to wait and see when it comes to what life is like when we get past this stupid pandemic, which has affected almost all of the year. But one of the things we're finding out is in cities like New York and San Francisco, some people have definitely decided to take a hike, to move, for reasons to do with the virus, for reasons to do with the fact that they can work remotely now, so they don't have to live in a place that maybe they didn't enjoy or they thought the rents or the home prices were too high. New York City's Upper West Side, big reports about a whole lot of people moving out of their homes for the suburbs.
Because they put hundreds and hundreds of vagrants and drug addicts in local hotels. And they're wandering the streets, shooting up and defecating.
In San Francisco, the reasons were already there. It's some of the highest rents and home prices in the country, rising so fast. So many people who would otherwise be considered, I guess, upper middle class were priced out. That's a city that's really just the very wealthy and the very, very homeless, and like the worst homeless cases in the country with people shooting up in BART stations.
I like that term, the very homeless.
They don't
even have a tent.
The extreme homeless, whatever you want to call it. Homeless 2.0. Reports come from there that rents are dumping. I saw one today as low as they've been in 7 years in the Bay Area, particularly in the city of San Francisco. Home prices taking a dump. And now this story, realtors in Hawaii claim that they are getting a lot of inquiries from Bay Area residents, California residents, but the Bay Area they mentioned specifically, for people who are interested in living somewhere in that state on one of the islands. Because, well, when you think about it, if you really want to get away, if you've really had it with city living, if you've really had it with the homeless, the virus, so I know there's homeless in Hawaii. I'm not trying to say there's not. But also, apparently, the fires, particularly for Bay Area residents, may have played into this. One realtor said, there's even people calling me who want to buy homes without seeing them. Which is pretty remarkable when you think about it.
There's so many people with so much money. And Mark Zuckerberg said the other day he could see Facebook going all remote work so at the end of next year, like permanently. This is working out for some companies real well. So a lot of that rental space, it doesn't matter how cheap it's going to go. No one's ever going to buy it. There's just no demand to move into San Francisco. Step in poo all day?
And I think for the tech people, that's probably correct. I think the way this is going to shake out, it's not going to be true for all professions.
No, but
some people are going to want the people in the office so they can have their face-to-face meetings and do their business quicker. But I think for tech people, where a lot of it is just digital.
Because they have no social skills anyway. They don't know how to look people in the eye and develop relationships. So
right.
So you just take...
And a lot of what they're talking about is programming and coding, and it's... It's not that relevant that they be in person with each other.
So, who wants to breathe toxic air and step in poo?
Well, listen to this. From January to June of this year, California residents bought nearly $600 million worth of Hawaii property, making up 41% of total sales during that period coming from the U.S. Now, granted, we are a closer state than most other states.
Yeah. And you know what? The jackasses in Sacramento won't acknowledge this. It's their left-wing buddies that are moving out because San Francisco is uninhabitable because of the vagrants.
Yep.
Yeah, so the idiots in San Francisco, they never protested. They never changed their votes. They just left the way a lot of middle-class Republicans just left over the last five, six, 7 years. Hundreds of thousands of them left, which is what turned the vote so lopsided for Democrats. Republicans moved out. Middle class ones did. And now the wealthy left wing progressive kooks are moving out because nobody wants to step in poo all day.
Yeah, apparently there's interest from Washington and Oregon too to go to Hawaii. Although I heard on the news today a guy in Louisiana said he's had enough because they were hit with another storm. Yeah. So some of this is also just fatigue from natural disasters like the fires here the hurricanes there. But
this makes sense. These are places nobody ever should have built up on. The places people shouldn't live to begin with. And I just wondered how many times, you know, are you going to watch a hurricane wipe your house away? How many fires are going to roar through your town before you say, wow, this is not habitable? Finally starting to sink in. Maybe they can't get insurance anymore. I don't know.
But then another Joe comes along and says, hey, that's a good opportunity. I'm going to buy your house. I'll live there until I burn down.
That's right. Go lose your house.
All right, coming up next to Mark Remillard, ABC News for KFI, about the plot, the arrests in Michigan, the attempt to kidnap the governor there.
John and Ken Show, Deborah Mark has the news, KFI AM 640.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
John and Ken Show. John Cobell, Ken Champeau, KFI, AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, you love your government? Right. Proof in point. The Employment Development Department responsible for paying out the unemployment. We're going to be talking about this hour. And of course, they left many people out in the cold because they couldn't even answer the phone. They could not process applications. All these unemployed people, thanks to the economic lockdown that was foisted upon us by the government of California. All right, so fast forward some months. People aren't getting any money. Then we started to notice a lot of fraud. So they shut the whole thing down for 2 weeks. They reopened it, and now they're cutting off people's accounts. They are freezing their debit cards. People, in many cases, who rightfully deserve the money,
they
can't get it now.
They can't seem to tell the fraudulent requests from the legitimate ones.
Well, they're saying Bank of America is doing it. That's who's responsible for these debit card transactions. But we'll talk about it coming up in a few minutes. But right now, one of the big stories nationally is the arrests of a number of people in the state of Michigan for a plot to kidnap the governor, Gretchen Whitmer.
Angry over the lockdowns. Mark, thanks for coming on with us. Explain what this is about.
Yeah, so this is appearing like it's kind of two separate plots, but both are connected in a way. Federal authorities charged six men with allegedly trying to kidnap Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer at her vacation home. They said that they went so far as to surveil her home, that they had plotted to explode some IED type of device to draw police resources away from that area when they moved in, and that they were allegedly plotting to do this before the election. So that's one. Then authorities said that some of the members of that group are also in contact with a local militia in Michigan, and there are seven members of that militia or associates of that militia that are now facing terrorism-related charges, gun-related charges, gang-related charges, for what authorities also said was a plot to essentially storm the Capitol, the state Capitol building in Michigan, kidnap government officials, including the governor, and essentially try to overthrow the state government that they believed was tyrannical. So you have these two separate kind of plots, but they're connected in a way. And authorities had been on these guys, they said, for months, used confidential informants and undercover agents to break this up. And it said it all went all the way up to yesterday that some of these guys were meeting to make a payment on some explosives and exchange tactical gear. So this is a very big, long, thorough investigation that authorities say culminated in these 13 arrests.
So one group wanted to kidnap her from her vacation home. The other group wanted to kidnap her and others from the state capitol. They were working on different tracks?
It sounded like it morphed, that at one time there was the plot to storm the state capitol. Then as time went on, they thought it better to try and kidnap her from her vacation home. So I don't know that those – I don't think those were running concurrently as much as they shifted. But again, these are two kind of different groups, and they're facing different charges. The militia groups facing charges in Michigan State. Those are the terrorism-related charges. And then you have these six guys who are facing conspiracy to commit kidnapping separately from the militia. And those are the ones that were plotting allegedly to kidnap her at the vacation home.
Did any of these guys know each other or belong to both groups?
So the group that was involved in the effort to allegedly take her from her vacation home, they had been doing outreach. They've been trying to, according to authorities, recruit other people, and that's where their contact with the militia came in. And so one of the guys, at least one of the guys in that group of six, was in contact with this militia group. And so that's where the connection between these two groups come from. But again, from my understanding is that the militia group was more involved originally with this plan to try and actually storm the state capitol. Then you have this other group of six guys that were involved with the effort at the governor's vacation home.
And obviously the lockdowns motivated everybody.
Well, that's what it seems to be. Authorities say that they got wind of this through social media earlier this year. There's definitely some anti-government sentiment involved in all of this, and the belief that Governor Whitmer had uncontrolled power, as authorities said one of them told them, one of the suspects told them, and that they actually wanted to kidnap her to hold their own trial for treason, believing that she had committed treason, essentially, and that her government, the Michigan state government, was violating the Constitution. And when Governor Whitmer spoke today, and then after the press conference, the Michigan Attorney General spoke today, they seemed to tie these things together to the fact that it likely has to do with the COVID restrictions, particularly. And Michigan Governor Whitmer was one of the early governors to bring lockdowns to the state. And we know that there were big protests back in the early months of the pandemic in Lansing over those decisions. So that was highly controversial, you know, particularly in Michigan. As we know, it's been controversial in almost every state where this has occurred at some level, but particularly in Michigan. And so she certainly felt like her decision to do that is what prompted this, you know. But she also, you know, says there's rhetoric and other divisions and other issues that prompt people like this to go forward with efforts of essentially terrorism.
I see a lot of quotes from these people that they are charging. Were they recorded, or was this stuff they wrote online?
Yeah, I believe there was a wire at one point. One of the confidential informants had a wire and recorded some conversations. And again, there's also the effort of undercover agents involved in this as well. So again, it seems like they infiltrated this group pretty thoroughly at some point over these couple months that they were investigating. This was a big operation, more than 200 members of law enforcement between the FBI and Michigan State Police.
All right, Mark, thanks very much for coming on.
Yeah, you bet, guys. Thank you.
Mark Remillard, ABC News, on the on two plots to kidnap the governor of Michigan, who had some of the strictest lockdown orders in the whole country, Gretchen Whitmer. Coincidentally, the Michigan Supreme Court last Friday ruled that Whitmer had no authority to issue or renew executive orders relating to the virus. She had extended her emergency declaration by executive order on April 30th because the Republican legislature wouldn't do it. And the Michigan Supreme Court Friday ruled that she didn't have the authority to do that.
I would imagine if you take a look at surveillance from those protests at the Capitol in Lansing, probably some of these guys were there. Remember, some of them were showing up with their guns out.
Yeah.
And I think at one point they did storm the Capitol, if I remember the story from months ago. They got inside.
Yeah, they did.
It was really crazy there.
Yeah, I think they got as far as the lobby.
What was the end game? And they try her for treason, and then they find her guilty, and then would they hang her? What are they?
Imagine some kind
of... And then they announce they have formed a new government, and everybody in Michigan goes right on.
Well, that's the way it goes in countries where there's a coup, right? The military comes in, and they take the old leader away, throw him in prison. Maybe they hang him.
What would the military be in Michigan?
The militia.
The National Guard?
No, these guys.
These self-appointed militia members?
What were they called? The Wolverine something.
Yep. It says here that they were thinking about creating a society that followed the U.S. Bill of Rights and where they could be self-sufficient. They discussed different ways of achieving this goal, from peaceful endeavors to violent actions. So you see, they were trying to consider all the possibilities.
Yeah.
But, as to how they could carry out. No. One of the guys called her a bleeping political parasite.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, this is... The Wolverine Watchmen, that's the name of the militia group. One
she
of these two groups.
She has uncontrolled power right now, they were saying. She's a tyrant bitch. I don't know, boys. We got to do something. That sounds like right out of a bad old movie. I don't know, boys. We got to do something.
People are pretty simple. They're pretty cliched beings.
Time to move her on out. Yep. Who's with me?
All right.
All right, we got more
They got out. The guns. John and Ken show. John Cobalt, Ken Champeau, KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
You wonder how tough it is in Michigan these days? A city worker in a town in Michigan outside of Detroit was sent to remove a Trump sign that was illegally placed in a yard. And after he grabbed it, he thought it was electrified. He was so shocked by the feeling, the sensation. Then he looked at his hand. It was all cut up. Somebody booby-trapped it with razor blades.
Oh!
Yep, and he's required 13 stitches to fix his hand.
Oh, so they knew that the Trump sign was going to be pulled out.
That's right. The homeowner, who wasn't identified, said she'd had several Trump campaign signs stolen, but I don't know nothing about no razor blades.
Is that a crime to do that?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Seems like that's a security measure, right?
What? It's a little extreme for a sign.
It's a pretty rough security measure.
It's valuable to the point where it's...
Yeah, but it's
highly valued stolen property.
People were committing crimes and stealing the signs, and nothing was being done about it. So it's like having barbed wire on the top of your fence.
The next time you get angry about some political sign, think twice before you grab it. All right, so the number that we're going to talk about right now is 1.6 million. That's the claim backlog at the Employment Development Department, unemployment claims. They claim that they're going to clear it by January. Ha.
Oh, they won't.
And, of course, they took a two-week vacation because they got so overwhelmed by fraud and such a backup of claims that they needed a timeout. Now they're back online, and the story this week is that Bank of America, which was hired by the state to issue those debit cards that the unemployed eventually get in the mail, or the fraudsters get in the mail, are freezing accounts. They are freezing accounts that allegedly have unusual activity or otherwise are suspicious. Now, they only just started doing this because the fraud started getting overwhelming. But legitimate claimants seem to be caught up. What you need to do is go back and re-verify your identity. You have to upload more documents. Some people claim in the story I'm looking at they did that, and they still can't get their money. Other money that they had on the card has just disappeared. You see, you're given a debit card with a balance.
I see.
And some people are claiming it's gone.
So the Bank of America just wipes out the money on the card.
That's apparently what they're doing. It says here, Bank of America is reviewing 358,000 debit cards issued to unemployed Californians and is looking into 315,000 unpaid unemployment claims.
But that Bank of America, the money does not belong to Bank of America. The money belongs to the state. So what, is the state using Bank of America as a shield to take the blame and to take the complaints?
I guess because Bank of America issues the cards, they're leaving it up to them to figure out, because Bank of America is saying they're finding suspicious high volumes of claims from one address. That's one reason they might suspend the card.
But Bank of America is getting the money from the state. The state is supposed to figure this out.
In the end, yes.
Yeah, so they've outsourced to Bank of America, and then all the complaints go to the bank, and then the bank tells these people, well, you got to come up with more ID, because the state didn't hire the people or train them to do the job properly to check out the legitimacy of these claims to begin with.
So it's like the worst nightmare for truly unemployed Californians who can't get their money, because some that do get their money are now finding their accounts frozen.
Newsom is so incompetent.
Well, I don't know. He had a strike team look into this.
Hey, yeah, and the strike team botched the investigation here because the story just gets worse and worse.
So what they did was they rolled out this new identity verification system, but that's what's getting people in trouble, because what they're doing is they're freezing people's cards and then saying you got to go back to your EDT account and verify your identity all over again. They think the fraud's going to be in the hundreds of millions of dollars. And I read another story today that because it was this pandemic unemployment insurance, it involves a lot of people that are independent contractors, and that's where the fraudsters really stepped in, because you think about it, people like that, you know, they're freelancers, right?
Yeah.
So you can pose as a freelancer, and it makes it a little bit easier to say, well, you know, I lost my job as an Uber driver, or I lost my gig writing newspaper columns.
Their job is supposed to figure this out, though. That's the government's job. We pay them hundreds of billions of dollars in taxes every year. Hundreds of billions. The California budget is over $200 billion, maybe $300 billion. That's their job. They're the ones who closed the businesses. They forced the businesses to close. They forced all these people out of work. After 6 months later, they have a whole bunch of excuses. Well, we didn't know this, and we didn't foresee that. It's like, how bad are you at this? You're supposed to. That's your job. You're supposed to sit down and think, okay, we're probably going to get hit with a lot of fraudsters. But they didn't. They didn't have that meeting. Newsom didn't have that meeting. He didn't think of it either. If you're giving out blank checks to people by the millions, of course bad guys are going to show up from all over the world, because they can do it online. People all over the world can go online. There's stolen identities to purchase on the underground internet by the millions. And they should know this in Sacramento. Wow. What a bunch of incompetent boobs. They're really quick and efficient at closing things down, right?
Yeah.
But to give people the money to keep them alive, Yeah. Bunch of loser excuses. Newsom is so in over his head. He is floundering, flailing, incompetent.
All right, we got more coming up.
John and Ken Show, John Cobalt, Ken Shampoo, KFI, AM 640 Live, everywhere in the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, the Moist Line is coming your way tomorrow, so if you want to leave a message to be a part of it, time's running out. 1-877-MOIST-86. Toll free, 1-877-664-7886. The announcement this morning that Trump would not take part in a virtual debate, which is what the Presidential Debate Commission announced earlier in the day, that the debate next Thursday, the second debate between Biden and Trump, would be virtual, meaning they would not be in the same room, was met with a no from Trump. Meanwhile, the wacky Democrats that run the House are trying to come up with a way not just to defeat Trump, but to stop the Supreme Court nomination from happening before Election Day. So they have brainstormed. Their ideas include impeaching Trump again. Yes, you laugh, but how about the Attorney General Bill Barr? Let's impeach him.
Impeach him?
I don't know.
They're not going to do any of this.
And
what
then
a bunch of kooks.
There's this from today's press conference. I guess Nancy Pelosi holds a weekly press conference, and she dropped this on reporters.
Well, I don't know what the prospects are when we hear people saying I'm young and I'm a perfect specimen, instead of addressing the fact that, what, 50,000 people were infected, reported to be infected yesterday, nearly 1,000 people died. What are we talking about here?
Yes,
tomorrow,
good question.
By the way, tomorrow, come here tomorrow. We're going to be talking about the 25th Amendment, but not to take attention away from the subject we have now.
The 25th Amendment requires a declaration of the president's inability from the vice president and either majority of either the heads of executive branch departments or of such other body as Congress may by law provide.
Did you hear how disjointed she was?
Well, I think that part of that was out of context. She was talking about the coronavirus cases.
But
she may have picked it up like mid.
No, but she was making no sense. She's got dementia too.
Well, then
she's 80 years old.
Did kind of lose her place.
Yeah, she's half in the bag as well. And as far as the 25th Amendment, that's so stupid. You'd have to get Trump's cabinet and the vice president to agree to vote him incapable of carrying out his duties. And then the Senate would have to approve.
From the vice president and either a majority of either the heads of executive branch departments or of other such body as Congress may by law provide to be sent to the Speaker of the House.
None of that's happening. She's crazy. That's just stupid. They're not going to impeach anybody. They're screwed on the Supreme Court.
And she would have to convince Senate Republicans to go along with the declaration. So
it shouldn't even be
plus
covered.
Pence would have to sign the declaration, which of course would be highly unlikely.
Why didn't all the reporters just walk away and not even record this?
She said, come back tomorrow. You'll see. I don't know what it is.
There's nothing to see. There's nothing they can do. They're flapping jaws. That's all they're doing. They've lost on this one.
She said, we have options. We have arrows in our quiver. I'm not going to talk about them right now.
She has an empty quiver. I checked her quiver. There's nothing in there.
You did.
God, all
that's
this
a little personal.
Why aren't all these people flushed? Honestly, it's like opening the door to a big mental institution where everybody's prattling and talking to the wall and engaging in all kinds of fantasies and role playing. You don't have the votes. You're screwed on that. Too bad. You lose.
It's
idiotic, and I don't understand why the media even covers this garbage. You can't invoke the 25th Amendment. That's not relevant.
Meanwhile, as they try to figure out what led to the explosion of coronavirus cases among the White House people, including President Trump, Patient Zero might be a guy by the name of Creed Bailey, who's very ill from COVID-19 and caught it in September. He grew sick before the Rose Garden event, which was held back on September 26th. That's when some people, because 10 attendees, including Trump and Melania and Kellyanne Conway, all tested positive for the disease just days after that event. And now you know Stephen Miller and Kaylee McEnany and
there's 34,
Hicks and
34 of them.
34 of them.
34. And this guy was in charge of security clearances.
Yes. So he had a key position inside the White House, probably giving him access to many different places.
By the way, are we assuming outside of this guy, everybody is getting better?
So far, I haven't heard any. Well, there is one little side story. Chris Christie's still in the hospital after 5 days.
Yeah, well, look at him.
People are wondering what's going on there.
Yeah.
Let me even look at him. That's a Trump line. Look at him.
Look at him. He's a prime target. He's too heavy.
He's a little overweight, yes.
He's too heavy. He probably has other pre-existing conditions.
Hmm.
Fat guys always have pre-existing conditions.
Yeah, I don't know the word on Bailey. I saw a picture of him. He was a little bit older.
Obesity.
Pre-Bailey, they're responsible for credentialing, access to the White House. They work closely with the Secret Service. They are all over the White House compound.
Obesity means you eat too much, obviously, which means you're clogging up your heart. You're overloading your pancreas.
Hmm.
Might be having kidney problems. Might be drinking too much. So, but I mean, the rest of them, I mean, all the 30-year-olds, you know, all of Trump's little hottie assistants, they're probably over it by now.
Oh, and I misspoke. 6 days in the hospital for Chris Christie. Although he did, sources say he's in good spirits, and he did send out some message the other day about hearing from a president of a foreign country. I think it was Jordan. The King of Jordan sent him a good...
Well, I don't know. But did he send the message, or did one of his aides do that to throw people off?
He's tweeting, apparently.
Who wrote the tweet, though? I don't believe anything. Did you see
apparently
the story?
Also has, he suffers from asthma.
Did you see the story on how everybody covered up Franklin Roosevelt's terminal illness while he was running for president in 1944? They had this big story in the San Francisco Chronicle. It was fascinating. So he's running for his fourth term, 1944, against Thomas Dewey. He was only 62 years old, but he had congestive heart failure. He was very weak. And when the doctor listened to his heart and lungs, he heard all kinds of gurgling and rattling in his lungs. They were filling up with fluid because his heart couldn't pump the blood fast enough anymore. And Roosevelt was dying. He didn't campaign. He did the Joe Biden. He stayed in the White House, gave some lame excuse that, well, in time of war here, I don't think it's appropriate to be campaigning. But he wanted to see through to the end of the war because the war in Europe was wrapping up and he wanted to make it to 1945 and hopefully the war in Japan would be over. And he wanted to see through to the end. So he ran every way. Anyway, everybody covered it up. Nobody leaked the news. And he couldn't walk. He already had, he had polio, so he couldn't walk. And got reelected, inaugurated in January. By April, he was dead, the age of 62. Congestive heart failure. Totally gave out. Nobody knew. Although if you look closely now at the photos, they say you could see that his face was very sunken and his ankles are really swollen. There was one picture of him where his pants had ridden up a bit and his ankles were bloated up.
Yeah, that's like the story I read this morning where Woodrow Wilson suffered a stroke. He also got sick, I think, from the Spanish flu.
Spanish flu, yeah. And his wife ran things. Same thing. They didn't tell anybody. So, now we live in this hyper age where we demand to know everything. But back then, they just died and the next guy took over.
All right, we got more coming up.
John and Ken Show, John Cobell, Ken Champeau, KFI, AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
All right, so for the next few minutes here on the John and Ken Show, we're going to somehow try to cure the divide between the cheeseburger-loving John Cobell and the vegan, Deborah Mark. Have you heard about cell-cultured meat?
No.
Ugh.
It is possible. Science has advanced. They can take a single cell from an animal. The story in the LA Times spotlights shrimp, but apparently they did this with beef several years ago, and they can reproduce it in the lab, and they claim that when they perfect it, it'll taste just
like beef.
Well, that's what they say.
But
it's from the animal. It's not, John, it's not soy.
It's not from the animal. It's from a test tube.
It's from the cell of the animal, though.
It's part of an animal. It's not vegan.
Well, it's not an animal. It's a reproduced cell. It's a cloned.
It's part of an animal.
Well, where's the rest of the animal?
Yeah, but we're not killing the animal to get the cell.
No, I know, but I don't want to eat anything to do with animals.
Even
that's just
if it
me.
Does not result in their death?
Yes.
Wow, I thought this was going to work.
No, no, no. She's a militant. She's a fanatic. I keep
they
telling you this.
They call it the
this,
test tube burger, which was developed 7 years ago by a guy in London.
No, she's an extremist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm? They're calling it the edible space race. At least 55 companies worldwide are now involved in developing some variety of cell-cultured meat.
Well, there's a lot of wasted venture capital money, isn't there?
There's an Australian startup that's growing kangaroo meat. A company in China is looking to recreate pork, where the demand is off the charts, in case you didn't know that. Last year, an Israeli startup successfully grew cow muscle tissue on the International Space Station.
And
the only problem they're having right now is not so much taste, but price.
I was going to say, it's got to cost an extreme amount of money to reproduce not just a cow cell or a burger, but you'd have to make, you know, billions of pounds of meat. And it has to taste good. I'm just guessing there must be something about a living creature that makes the meat taste good.
What's the point of this, though? Is it to kill less animals?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Okay, so I like that. I still don't want to eat it,
and
so I like that.
To produce it on a bigger scale for people around the world to help cure starvation, because if you can grow so much meat from a single cell, I mean, think about that. It says here a single cell can reproduce over a trillion times the amount of shrimp.
They don't care about feeding starving people. They want to make a fortune. They want to make money. So how do you produce this to scale?
Well,
it seems like it would be a very expensive process.
It is right now. In fact, the story today, which revolves around shrimp, this guy ended up making a shrimp dumpling out of it, and it cost $300 a piece.
All right. Well,
that's expensive. But
raising
that's
beef
better
is
than
pretty
the $300,000 hamburger the guy made 7 years ago in London.
Oh, out of a single cell?
Yes.
Yeah, this is science fiction stuff. It's not happening.
You don't think it's going to happen?
No. No, beef is really cheap. All you have to do is buy cheap land, grow grass, and have the cow chew on it till you're ready to chop them up.
You know what's even cheaper? Broccoli or kale. Quinoa. Box of quinoa. Very cheap.
There's no call
Lots
for
of
any
protein.
Kind of vegetable cell.
Tastes terrible. You can't get past the taste. That's
I love
the thing.
Everything I just mentioned. I love. It tastes delicious.
You just like eating foul things.
It's not foul.
Oh, it is foul.
That's your opinion.
I've tasted all that stuff. It all tastes harsh, bitter.
When did you ever have quinoa?
I've had quinoa. They introduced it at my house one day. I thought it was terrible. I've bitten into kale. I've bitten into broccoli. It tastes harsh. I can't swallow it.
Well, I think it's all in your head.
This is supposed to help eliminate salmonella, E. coli, and people who work in these processing plants from getting sick from the virus.
Yeah, all right.
It's going to be a huge breakthrough, and it's only a year away from your grocery store.
It is not a year away.
All right, we'll come back in a year.
I'll bet $1,000 on that one.
Is that right?
Yes, I'll bet $1,000. There's not going to be. And what are they going to be charging?
We'll see. Well, I doubt they put it in the grocery store. They're going to charge.
They're going to get the price down in a year.
Get
out. It's utopian nonsense.
Looks like we did not cure the divide.
We did not.
No.
It's even worse now, I think.
He says it's not going to happen. And she says if it does, you ain't touching it.
So. Right. So you've won no one over.
I've won no one over. I will sit down with that burger in a year, and I will prove to you.
We're going to talk to Joe Collins next. He's the opponent of Maxine Waters, the nutty congresswoman.
Everybody's nutty.
Yeah, everybody's out of their minds. John and Ken Show, Deborah Marquez News, KFI AM 640. John and Ken Show, John Cobell, Ken Shampoo, KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeart Radio app.
Welcome, everybody, to another hour of this. We got the Moist Line tomorrow, so it's a quick reminder to continue to leave us your messages for Moist Line Friday. 1-877-MOIST-86, 1-877-664-7886.
Joe Collins, we've had on before, he's running against Maxine Waters for the 43rd District in California, and that's South L.A., Torrance, Hawthorne, Lawndale, Gardena, Inglewood, Lomita. And he's taken on, I don't know, she must be in her early 80s. And everybody knows Maxine Waters. Just a complete crank.
She was really vocal the first year of Trump. Remember 2017? And then before the, and she got quieter, I thought, in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
About Trump, anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. One of the great mysteries is the why anybody votes for her. But Joe Collins is making a good run at her. Joe, how are you?
Yeah, no, I'm blessed. How about you guys?
We're good. You know, as best as you can be these days. How's your campaign going?
Man, our campaign is going good. We couldn't ask for a better campaign. I want to thank everybody who has supported and contributed to our campaign since we started this run to the general election after the primaries. I mean, it's been a complete slaughter for Maxine Waters. Man, we've been whipping her up and down the 43rd district.
Now, are you? What kind of reaction are you getting from people? Because she's had an extremely loyal following for decades, and she gets incredible winning margins when she runs for reelection. Mm-hmm. So what are you sensing any kind of a change? Or are they still in love with her? Because they treat her like a family member.
They don't treat her like a family member. And if they did, she'd be like the auntie that you hate. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, here goes that's Auntie Maxine again. You know, but I think one of the biggest things, I'm from South Central Los Angeles, born and raised, and I still have roots there. My granddad had one of the biggest black churches before mega churches was a thing. So I'm accepted pretty well. And, you know, unlike a lot of candidates, I don't preach Trump 24/7 because I understand a lot of people like him and I understand a lot of people don't like him. So the message that I preach in the community is a message that resonates with people, which is why we're doing so well. And it's the, also the reason why we have Democrats, Republicans, Independents, Libertarians, Freedom of Peace, Green Party, Constitutionalists, everybody on our team helping us to win this district. I mean, people are loving us. We're taking care of the community. We do job fairs, back to school drives, food pantries where people could come get free food. We do everything. You
did
know?
The
so people really like a district, Maxine?
Did the defund the police idea gain any traction in your district?
You know what? We love people talk about defunding the police, but at the end of the day, nobody really wants the police defunded. We supported the sheriff's department and the law enforcement run these people who were protesting in the name of Black Lives Matter, but trying to be violent. We support the police department, you know, running them out. And we actually got the gangs and the police to, you know, kind of work together for a common good. And that was to not destroy our communities. It was epic. They tried to protest for 2 days, tried to destroy things for 2 days, but we never seen them again. It's crazy.
But do you drove them out or what?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we drove them. So what we did was we talked to the gangs and we told the gangs, look, if you allow these people to come in and start destroying things, we're going to end up with 92 again with Maxine Waters inside of those riots. Then we went and talked to the sheriff's department and said, look, we need to protect our community. So I know y'all got a lot of spare rubber bullets and tear gas. So what we're going to do is we're going to run these violent protesters into the gangs and the gangs are going to beat them up. And we're going to push them out of the community. Now, we shut off Uber and Lyft. And at nighttime, when they started to get violent, the sheriff did exactly what they were supposed to do. The gangs in the community did exactly what they were supposed to do. And now we don't have any more violent protests.
Because, I mean, your area got obviously hit hard by those 92 riots. And many neighborhoods never came back. You know, they were devastated. And that was it. And to this day.
Yep.
They're suffering.
That's the reason why a lot of people are sick of Maxine, because she's been promising she's going to rebuild, and she hasn't. And I seen an interview on Spectrum One where she was taking credit for the economic development in Inglewood. And I was like, wow, I can't believe it. She's been in office for 26 years, hasn't did anything, and now she's taking credit for something somebody else did. Like, what a nut job.
I think one of the issues in your district, Joe, is that it looks like the turnout's pretty low. It says here in 2018, only 30% came out to vote. I think what you'll find is that maybe a lot of people are sick of Maxine Waters, but they're just not showing up. How can you cure that?
Well, they haven't had anyone strong enough to vote for. A lot of people want to run for office because they want to be famous. But I'm the first person in a very long time to be able to run for office and actually take this position seriously, which is why we're already working right now as if we were already in Congress. What we've been able to do that was so strategic was remove the political party preference from the conversation when people talk about Joe Collins versus Maxine Waters, so people can see that Joe Collins is from the community and he wants to better the community regardless of if you are Democrat or Republican.
It's hard to get people involved, I'd imagine, with a voting rate that low. Most people probably just don't believe in the system, just don't care, probably not even following.
Well, turnout will be higher this year because that was 2018. This is the presidential race. I'm sure the turnout will be higher, but there's still going to be an issue there. You're right.
You know what's good? We have a lot of young people on our team, so we're creating a brand new voter base. We're creating a voter base that Maxine Waters can't get. her voter base is older, black, you know, Democrats who believe that we're still in the post-racism era. So we've been able to invigorate our communities. Even, you know, older black people are like, you know what, you're right. Maxine has had it. She's old. She's 82 years old. She's a nut. She has never said anything positive. It's time for a change. And that's really exciting to see this, you know.
You said in one interview that with Maxine, everything is racism. Everything is racist. Talk about that. Talk about how you're different.
That's all she says. Well, all she talks about is racism. She tries to play this card like it's us against them. And one of the biggest issues that I have with Maxine Waters is she panders and complains as if she's a victim when she has, as a legislator, the power to affect change positively, not just in our community, but across the entire United States, being in Congress. But she's so lazy that she wanna do it. Me, I don't care about the race. I don't care what your political party preference is. What I care about is representing the people in a manner that is positive and productive for everybody else. So I don't preach racism. What I preach is we need to improve our education. We need to bring jobs back. We need infrastructure. We need to support our small businesses. We need to support our law enforcement. Like, everything that comes with positive change is what I support. And people love it. Even Max, she's still doing the same thing. Oh, he's a racist this, he's a racist that. It's like, calm down, window licker. President Trump is not a racist. Joe Biden, if you want to talk about racism, has been the most racist person that we've ever had in office ever since the 70s. So the issues that we have in the black community came from the Democratic Party ever since the slavery era, and now we're waking people up to this.
What's your campaign days like? You going door to door? Really, how are you connecting with people here?
Look, if I tell you, you wouldn't believe it. I mean, we are door to door. We're phone banking. We're doing community events. We travel across the community. We have our four vans all over the place. We bought all the billboards. We bought all the radio ads. We bought all the TV advertisement. Everything they wouldn't let me get on, I bought it. So now they have to run my advertisement, and we just make it look like a news interview, you know? Wait. So we're doing.
Well, wait, who doesn't want to let you on?
MSNBC, CNN, everything that black Democrats listen to, they don't let me on because they do not want to hear what I got to say.
You're a black Republican, so left-wing news shows don't want you on to be interviewed.
Yeah, it's crazy. That's why we bought them. So they don't have to interview me, but they're going to play on advertisement because, you know, money talks. So, you know.
Local stations don't want to interview you?
The local radio stations do. I mean, like, you know, local Fox 5, they follow us around. KTLA has been very awesome to our campaign. Everybody else, I mean, we bought them, so it doesn't matter. Spectrum has been an absolute blessing. Love Spectrum, you know. Yeah. The radio, all the radio stations are wonderful. But I think people has realized that, you know, I'm preaching a message of hope. We have a message of prosperity, and we're actually working. So it makes them comfortable. Just MSNBC and CNN, you know.
Yeah, well,
it's whatever.
They're not really news outlets. They're propaganda outlets. No, Joe, listen, best of luck.
Maybe we'll talk tell everybody again. How to find you social media and online.
Yeah, my social media, Collins for Congress 43, Facebook and Instagram, and Twitter is Joe Collins 43rd. My website is Joe Collins for Congress 43. Please continue to donate, continue to volunteer, continue to support us. We have to make it through November. We're winning right now. But the more support, the more donations, and the more volunteers we get, the greater chance that I can guarantee you that we're going to send Maxine Waters not only to retirement, but to jail.
All right, Joe Collins, right. Thanks for coming on.
Joe Collins, yeah.
And again, that's the 43rd District, which is Maxine Waters has had that seat for 30 years.
God,
she is 82.
It's shocking how many leaders are so elderly. Biden's going to be 78 any day now, and Nancy Pelosi was fumfering around. We played her clip earlier. Is 80. Maxine Waters is 82. I mean, God, there's like a whole generation that's going to be skipped over here.
Yeah, they should elect somebody young and energetic like Joe.
You would think. John and Ken Show, John Cobell, Ken Shampoo, KFI, AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
Well, we wondered, you know, with these reports of a rise in COVID-19 cases around the country, what would happen with New York? Now, New York City got hit the hardest at the beginning of all this, and by the time it was over, New York State had 32,000 deaths, which still remains more than twice the level of California because it really just plowed right through that region, particularly the nursing homes. So they've been particularly sensitive to any new outbreaks. And over the last couple of weeks, they noticed in their statistics, they actually have a something called SAT scan, a disease data detection program, and it warned about a rise of coronavirus cases in a neighborhood of Brooklyn called Borough Park. So the city's health commissioner, Dave Chokshi, Dr. Dave Chokshi, held an urgent news conference with Orthodox Jewish news outlets to warn of rising transmission and said, you're going to have to follow the public health advice or there's going to be a major crackdown. Well, the response from reporters immediately was, oh, wait a minute. How come the mayor, Bill de Blasio, didn't crack down on the protesters in the streets, the mass gatherings, the Black Lives Matter demonstrations?
Yeah. Yeah, they got a free pass, but the Orthodox Jews are getting roughed up by the police.
Yes. Well, I guess if there was an outbreak from the protesters, it didn't, like, cluster in certain neighborhoods because those people probably scattered all over the place in New York City or the country, wherever they came from. So if they got the virus from each other, it didn't, like, show up in the data as being in one specific area of the city. That was probably the downside there.
Right, but they still shouldn't allow it just because the virus is going to be spread out geographically when everyone goes home. You're still spreading the virus. You're just not doing it in one zip code.
So if you haven't heard by now, they took to the streets. There was an ugly night of protest Tuesday. Apparently last night they attacked a reporter. And they are continuing to be outraged by this decision to crack down on things like synagogue gatherings. Right now they're being limited in some neighborhoods. No more than 10 people at a time can be in the synagogue. And of course, there's a lot of holy days in September and October on the Jewish calendar. So they're particularly outraged by this. And then things I didn't know, some of them are Hasidics, Orthodox, but they don't really use the internet much.
No. See, I knew this, that they're isolated and they're taught to be isolated. They're not on the internet. They don't even watch television. They don't read mainstream newspapers.
But they listen to Yiddish radio.
Yeah.
And apparently a lot of the commentators there are conservative. And some of them are Trump fans. And some of this rebellion is because they're not believing the things like wearing a mask and social distancing. And they believe that they have a calling to have their religious gatherings. And it's kind of a screw you, which is why they've been in the streets arguing with the police. Positivity rates apparently have risen in this area. Somewhat as high as 8%. Most of New York is down around 3%. And the concern is if the positivity rates grow in the other parts of the city, they're going to have to roll back some of the reopenings.
There's one Hasidic enclave. Palm Tree is the town. 18%. And that's
positivity
rate? That's up in Orange County, outside of New York City.
Outside of New York City, right.
Yeah, 18% positivity rate. Now listen to this story. Back in Borough Park in Queens, one man, he spoke anonymously because he feared social ostracism. He stopped wearing a mask after his 8-year-old son came to him crying. His son's friends were teasing him, saying his father was under the sway of liberal goyim.
Goyim!
A term for non-Jews that is often pejorative. So the kid was upset, came home crying. His dad was wearing a mask.
Apparently, Trump rolled up pretty good numbers in 2016 in some of these more Orthodox Hasidic neighborhoods. He got to, and as you know, Israel's a big fan of Trump. Most of it is. And he's negotiated these peace deals to get Israel more recognized. So he's probably pretty popular among aspects of the Jewish population. Well, so, they're kind of looking at him more than they're going to look at Cuomo or de Blasio for guidance on.
They announced the lockdowns in the middle of the Jewish holiday, Sukkot.
Right. And that got them even more outraged.
There's a Hasidic journalist named Yochanan Dan, and he says the community feels a double standard. This is the overwhelming consensus. Why are the free speech rights of protesters more important than the rights of people who want to pray? Yeah, that embracing of the protesters, that was very damaging to the credibility of all these.
It did. Same here with Garcetti. Yeah. The same thing. A lot of people felt that way.
Because you realized
you're going to tolerate all the protesters, but you can't tolerate anybody else gathering.
It wasn't about science or data or health concerns. It was about whether they agreed with the message of the protest or not. And if you weren't on the right woke side, you were going to get punished.
All right, a poll has come out about how California voters feel about particularly parents, this distance learning, and it's predictable. They don't like it. More coming up.
John and Ken Show, John Cobalt, Ken Shampoo. It's KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
The only thing that surprised me about this poll is that the answer wasn't 100%. They asked parents, registered voters in California, what do you think of this distance learning? 75% said it's worse than in-class instruction. Not 100%, I don't understand.
But the other 25% don't care.
Maybe that's the case.
Yeah. they don't want to say, I don't want to be critical. I don't want to say anything negative.
Or maybe they were like, it's better that my child's at home, so therefore I will support distance learning because I want my child to be safe. That matters more than whether or not they fall school grades behind.
Distance learning is a fraud. There is no learning. It's nonsense.
Yes.
I have seen distance learning in my own house. Believe me, it's a waste.
But that was college too. That's probably a little different. You got like an 8-year-old kid trying to distance learn. Can you imagine what
that's
going to
be
like?
Saying. I was imagining. I mean, I got a 20-year-old who's got trouble paying attention to it because it's so boring and disconnected and lifeless.
Does he do live classes or is it just like recorded stuff that he looks at?
No, it's a teacher droning on. You got her big head, you know, taking up your computer screen. Yeah. And it's dreadful.
I like this. 1/3 of parents couldn't cite anything positive about their experience with distant learning. That means zero. You know how people do try to be polite. The greatest concern among the parents is about the learning loss for their children. And they also feel that there's a big problem with distance learning because there's just no classroom feedback between the teacher and the students that's more direct. Insufficient instructional time. It's hard for children to work on their own. It's hard for them to understand assignments. Mm-hmm. And it's been hard to get their children's interest in studying. Yeah. They cannot sustain it.
Why can't they wear masks? If the masks work, if that's the requirement, if that's the reason that...
COVID.
Bless you. Don't come near me.
Don't go in that room.
Will you come in here for a visit?
No, sorry.
I have a viral cloud swirling around my head now.
No, wow. I will not be coming over there.
Are you coming down with COVID? Should we have you checked?
Yes. One sneeze indicates... the virus.
That's got to be prepared. Of course, low-income parents in this poll in particular were against prolonged distance learning. It also makes it difficult for them to get back to work because with their kids at home doing distance learning, what are they going to do? They got to find somebody to look after their kids or they got to do it themselves?
But what I was saying is they say, well, the reason the rates go down is because people wear masks. And if you stay 6 feet away, so why can't they do that? Why are the teachers so stubborn? Why are they stealing money from the taxpayers and not giving us an honest day's work and educating the children? Why is that so difficult to ask? Do your
Anybody
job.
Anybody that
show
really
up for work.
Wants their kid to learn is going to have to figure out. I mean, it says in this story, a lot of them are taking their kids and putting them in private schools or they're doing those little classes that we
God
talked
sakes,
about.
For God's sakes, doctors and nurses show up. The police and firemen show up. The grocery store workers show up. I mean, there's so many areas where so many industries where people are showing up for work. They're still showing up at meatpacking plants, right? That's got to be a little more dangerous. They're still showing up at the textile shop, sewing clothing. Why can't the teachers do it? Why are they so and nobody's criticizing them. Nobody's pointing out that they should be taking the minimal risk and the minimal sacrifice. And they're not. And if they're wearing masks, that's what I understand. Explain to me, if the masks and distancing work, why can't you at least have the classes, out on the lawn, out in the parking lot? Why can't you set up chairs and give the teacher a microphone? I rotate kids in and out, even for 3 hours a day would help. What's wrong with everybody? This is disastrous for an entire generation. Disastrous.
Speaking of everybody, the lemmings in California, the overall poll showed a majority of California voters support the education issues that Gavin Newsom's handled, including the distance learning. Two-thirds.
Wait, don't we have a big disconnect here?
Among the parents, it was about 50-50.
Yeah, there's
49% approving, 47% disapproving.
There's a lot of people who don't have kids. You know, a lot of the left-wing progressives up in San Francisco, they're not reproducing. Okay? they're not into family.
They're just delaying these decisions. Careers are very
important.
That's
right. They're all into their silly little careers. They're working as their social media brand managers and tech guru.
I'm going to make Twitter number one.
Right. They don't have kids. They don't know. So they're sitting home saying, well, I think it's wonderful that the governor is doing the best he can to make everything safe for us all. They don't have kids whose brains are dying, right? And the elderly, the same thing. Oh, well, we don't want the virus to spread around. It's very dangerous. That's great. You don't have kids.
Yeah,
you don't care.
Point. The people that can quarantine and isolate, like work from home or they're elderly and they don't work, period. Yeah, you're right. All about, let's just stop this virus 100%. We can shut the economy down forever because I can still work or I can still stay retired.
Who cares what the polls say? All right? The intelligent thing to do if you cared about the children is you set up a system where they can get educated. The teachers should be forced into work. And anybody who wants to opt out and let their kid go brain dead and do the useless distance learning, then let them opt out. You want your kid brain dead? Then go ahead. Opt out. But for the parents who really care about their kids, they should, and if the teachers don't want to show up, then maybe we ought to hire other people. It's not that complicated a job.
Well, after 5 o'clock, we're going to talk about Proposition 17, dealing with giving people who are on parole the right to vote. And we're expecting the yes and no sides to join us after 5.
John and Ken Show, John Cobell, Ken Shampoo, KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
All right, we're up to Proposition 17 after the news at 5 o'clock. This is the one that we are a no on, and it wants to extend voting rights to people who are on parole. Supposedly 50,000 Californians are currently serving parole, and some of them want the right to vote, even though it's still part of their sentence, and they're not done with their sentence yet. And that's the argument for no, but we'll hear, at least from the yes side, I haven't seen a confirmation, which is weird. Usually, whatever way we have in our voter guide, we find that person comes on and the person from our opposing side doesn't. But we have the yes side coming on.
Well, so far, we've been 2 for 3, right? With opposition.
Yes. Right. The first 2 days we had yes and no. Mm-hmm. And yesterday we just had no.
No,
which agreed with our assessment. But today we may only have yes, which is the opposite of our voter guide. So John Stossel is a longtime reporter, a consumer reporter, a pretty logical, straightforward voice about things going on in society. He wrote a column about the, it's called The Undeniably Biased National Media. And it starts out like this, quote, a pioneer devoted to equality. Well, that was the Washington Post headline about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. But when Antonin Scalia died, the headline in the Washington Post was Supreme Court conservative dismayed liberals. When the founder of ISIS was killed, the headline was austere religious scholar at helm of Islamic State dies.
Oh, that was the classic that they'll never live down. It was
when President Trump's brother died, the headline was younger brother of President Trump who filed lawsuit against niece dies. Nice.
And, you know, I noticed that. Out of his entire life, 72 years, the lead headline was that he filed a lawsuit against
that
his
was
niece.
The current news at the time, but I still
but it,
think that's
was
unfair.
It necessary to encapsulate his life in one headline with the lawsuit? But the ISIS thing was unbelievable. It's unimaginable how many people were killed because of what the ISIS founder created, and he turned into an austere religious scholar. And that one they changed. They got so much angry blowback that they were shamed into revising the headline.
But nobody there saw that coming when they had that headline. Nobody proofreads and says that may not go over too well.
Here's why. It's what they really believe. It's their groupthink.
So their bubble.
This explains why the media covers things the way it does. This is how they believe. This is their philosophy. This is their little cult. And so it never occurred to them to describe the ISIS leader as somebody who is violent, whose actions led to terrible destruction and murder. Because Trump was going after ISIS, maybe. So they didn't want him to get some kind of reflected credit.
Oh, I see.
For the ISIS leader. Right. Instead, it's an austere religious scholar. It's almost like legitimizing that version of Islam as just being another belief system that we ought to respect.
Stossel notes, like we did, while watching CNN during the summer's protest, I noticed that reporters kept calling protests mostly peaceful, even when reporting violence. CNN posted the words, "mostly peaceful protest" on the screen while flaming cars are on the street behind the reporter. CNN said, well, 93% of the protests were peaceful. They got it from some study. But according to a guy who writes for The Hill, well, when planes crash, we don't put down that 99% landed safely. When people start dying and losing their businesses, that's your story.
Yeah, the riot here in Los Angeles, where 88 businesses burned on Fairfax, that was being described as mostly peaceful. I remember that.
Well, they constantly want to say it's just a few detractors.
No, you know what they're doing? They're lying. They're a bunch of woke holes lying, gaslighting the public, trying to fool us, trying to spread their propaganda and their brainwashing. They have to be called out for this. They're not journalists. They're not giving us the news. They're not giving us truth. They're giving us this bizarre woke ideology. And you have to steel your mind to not let it affect the way you think and the way you feel and the way you look at the world. It's better not even to watch it.
It says that in March, CNN sneered at Trump for misleading people by claiming the U.S. did more COVID-19 tests than any other country. They correctly pointed out that per capita, South Korea and Italy tested many times more. But then, to make Trump look worse, CNN suddenly stopped adjusting for population. They scolded the president. The U.S. has more coronavirus cases than any country in the world. But that's wrong. Adjusted for population, 28 countries, including France, England, Ireland, and Norway, had more cases. So you see what they did, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I say this all the time, and people just look at me and they stare. Adjusted for population.
They adjusted
many
for population
other countries
to correct Trump on the testing, but not on the deaths.
Right.
Or the cases, I should say.
And all this gets too complicated. There's nowhere you can quickly go to, if you were interested, to figure out the truth. You'd have to go find one of those websites where they're tracking cases in every country, and then find the column where they show you the rate per million. And then you have to count and see where the United States falls. And no one's going to do that. So it locks in people's head. It's like, oh, yeah, it's really bad. Didn't you hear? You know, we've got the most cases than any country, except we have a very populous country. So, of course, we're going to have more cases than most.
Then, of course, during the Republican National Convention, CNN put up a black ticker tape, fact check, but they didn't do that for the Democratic Convention. That's a good read by John Stossel. All right, when we come back, we're expecting to talk about Proposition 17, the attempt to give parolees in California. Now, they haven't completely finished their sentence. They're on parole, the right to vote.
John and Ken Show, Deborah Mark has the news, KFI AM 640. John and Ken Show, John Cobell, Ken Champeau, KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
I'm glad you two find it very funny.
Well, he's making fun of me as I'm reading the temperatures. So I'm watching him do these weird hand movements, so it cracked me up.
Wow.
He's such a toddler.
Getting a little handsy in there, isn't
it? No. That's not what I said.
You too, I don't know. Maybe time to separate.
She's far away from me. She's in her little crazy,
and I like it that way.
Her padded crazy booth there.
But she sees right through the window at you.
Yeah.
Staring you down.
All right. We're trying to do a proposition every day if we can, because there's 12 of them. And we're up to Proposition 17 on the ballot.
It looks like we did get the yes and the no side. So we're going to start with the yes side. Proposition 17 on your ballot is looking to give felons on parole in California the right to vote.
And parole is what a prisoner gets when he's released from prison. And as long as he follows certain guidelines, he has his freedom. But he's not officially done with
right,
his sentence
still
yet.
Considered part of the entire
and
sentence.
If he screws up, he could be thrown back into prison. We will have the no side, but we're first going to interview Shay Franco-Clausen, ballot measure campaign. Well, the ballot measure campaign manager for Yes on Prop 17. Very long title. Shay, welcome to the John and Ken Show.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a very long title. Thank you for having me. Yes, I'm Shay Franco-Clausen, campaign manager for Yes on Prop 17. And it will restore the voting rights of
why should peaceful people in their homes right now welcome paroled criminals getting the right to vote? Why is this a good thing for their lives?
Well, I don't disagree that crimes should have consequences. But if we look at the current system, it doesn't work. Studies have shown that successful reintegration leads to reducing recidivism. Now we're taking a look at the justice system. We all know that laws are not equally distributed. We have white-collar crime, wage theft, just to name a few. And individuals like this who have done harm to thousands who see little to no prison time.
Can you hang on a second? It's just the phone connection is really bad. You're really muffled, and I don't think people can hear. Can we do something about that?
We try to establish a better connection. I guess that's a cell phone.
Were you having trouble hearing it? I was.
It's very muffled. I agree with you. I actually just texted Ray to say that, same time you were doing that.
there we go.
That sounds much better.
Yes, that's great.
Sorry, I was using earpiece,
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that could have been the reason.
Oh, none of this new technology works.
All right, so you were making your point about this. Continue.
Go ahead.
This is shit.
Yeah, so like I said, I don't disagree that crime should have consequences. But like I said, we look at the current system and it doesn't work. Successful reintegration leads to reducing recidivism. And if we look at the justice system, laws are not always equally distributed. We have different forms of crime like white-collar crime, wage theft, that, it impacts and harms thousands. And many of these see little to no prison time, let alone parole. In comparisons to people who commit property crime, stealing cell phones, they're faced with heavier sentences. And so, Yes on Prop 17 is saying, I heard your intro because I was actually on, is that those people that have went through a very rigorous process and gone to a parole board, this parole board has deemed them suitable to return back in their community. And parole is an extension of a reintegration. It's not their prison term is complete. They're in a reintegration process.
But this could include murderers. Hello? Murderers could be included in this. They are paroling murderers.
Ken, you hear me on this?
We don't want to hear your canned speech. We like a back and forth with the guests. We don't want to hear your canned speech. This is a different kind of show. We will interrupt you when we think you made a point that needs challenging. And I'm asking you, you really believe that paroled murderers should be able to vote?
I believe that anyone that has been deemed suitable to return to the community and contribute in a meaningful way by paying taxes, working, and showing up in their community should have the right to vote.
Here's my problem. We have a lot of propositions, and some of them were sold to the public under false pretenses. And it seems like an ideology has taken over where everybody's getting released from prison. And it is not a careful analysis on a case-by-case basis. It's wholesale dumping of prisoners. Prop 47, Prop 57, AB 109.
Now the COVID thing.
The virus thing is giving cover. And it seems like we've had 10 years of everybody getting out. And I just can't believe that there's been a lot of scrutiny given to most of these people. That's the easy cliche that people say. Because we're not up in Sacramento, how can we prove otherwise? But it doesn't make sense that you can release thousands and thousands of prisoners and everything's okay. We've got 70,000 people living in the streets down here. I know a lot of them came from prison and jail, and they didn't have any home. And they're crazy, they're drug addicted, and it has not made life better. And it's happened in just a few short years since they started opening up the prisons. And I don't see now how giving them the right to vote is a privilege that they ought to have when so many of them are living in the streets now and causing a lot of crime and mayhem that isn't even recorded anymore. It's not even being reported to the cops anymore.
Well, can I speak now? Is this a space where I can speak?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Well, I'm going to tell you that I'm not here to speak to a segment of people who don't believe that people who do crime can be rehabilitated. It doesn't make sense for me to try to convince them. But what I can tell you is that I'm also formerly incarcerated, and I was incarcerated at an early age. But today, not only am I running a statewide ballot measure, You know, I have family that are in prisons. I also have a lot of family that are in law enforcement, but I'm an elected official. I serve on county and state commissions, and I have been contributing to my community for over 20 years. I have so many awards for the work I've done because being civically engaged motivated me to care and reinvest in my own community.
But you're the exception. So I think that there's a... But you're an exception. Okay. You're not the rule.
But I think these are rare stories that are not always highlighted. We seem to put it in this one category, but it isn't that. It's just these stories are not being told.
Well, you're off parole now, right?
How is it that much of a setback to
All right, so then you can vote, right?
Yeah, why is it such such a burden to just wait for them to finish their parole period? What's the rush to get them back to voting? Because they'll vote the way that some of the reformers want them to vote?
No, I think that when we talk about people voting, if they have to pay taxes, they have to get driver's license, and they have to go to work, they do contribute. Not most of homeless people are these people that are from jails. And the homeless population has nothing to do with this conversation. I think it was mentioned before.
Yeah, it does.
It's about saying those
people. It exploded as soon as Prop 47 passed and they started emptying out the jails and the prisons. That's the year it exploded, the same year.
We've had homelessness in our community for a very long time.
We didn't have 70,000. No. I've lived here a long time. No, it exploded the last 5 years.
It has been very prominent to see people that have mental health that are on the streets.
Yeah, I know. They were in prison.
There's no system for that. But that has nothing to do with people being on parole in this conversation and restoring their voting rights.
Why should they get voting rights? I mean, they're crazy. They're doing drugs. They're living out on the sidewalks. You want to give them the right to vote so a ballot harvester can fill out the forms for them and send in more Democratic votes?
That happens. I think that you're someone that may just not believe in rehabilitation. But there's a lot of people that
I'm seeing the streets
right at this moment who've done crimes and never were caught that are voting every day. They vote all the time.
Yeah.
There's people that have had misdemeanors that were felony that were plead down. They can vote all the time.
Well, that's a problem with pleading down felonies. That's a whole nother issue.
That are homeless can vote too. There's a system for them to vote too.
By the way, would you be into this if all these prisoners were guaranteed to vote Republican at the end?
I don't care how they vote. I believe it's a matter of choice and having the opportunity to vote. I'm married to a Republican, so and we agree and disagree on certain things.
All right, Shay, thank you very much for coming on.
All right,
Shay Franco-Clausen with the Yes on Prop 17 campaign. That's about allowing people on parole, there may be 50,000 of them in California right now, to vote. The no side is coming up next. We're now going to get the no side on Proposition 17. We just talked to the yes side. We're going through the ballot measures one at a time, one day at a time. And this is the one about allowing felons on parole the right to vote in California, affecting supposedly about 50,000 residents. And the no side is being represented by, who else? State Senator Melissa Melendez.
Welcome to the show. We just had the campaign manager on for Prop 17, talking about how this helps integrate the parolees back into life, leads to less recidivism. What's your argument?
Well, that's interesting that she says that. Did she provide any data to show that it reduces recidivism? Because I don't think there is any.
No.
No, I didn't think so. So here's the thing. California restores voting rights to anyone who's been incarcerated after they have completed their time in incarceration and they've completed their time on parole or probation. I think that's fair. That gives you an opportunity to show you are now willing to follow the rules and the laws of society that everyone else has to follow, and then your voting rights are restored. And I would ask the woman who was in favor of this, what she thinks about the victims and how they feel about this, because it is preposterous for her to suggest that someone should be allowed to vote in this upcoming election, specifically because there's Prop 20 on the ballot, which relates to criminal justice. So is she saying that she thinks it's appropriate that someone who ended up in prison is now going to be allowed to vote while they're on parole on a proposition that directly relates to a crime that they may have committed, given the fact that they haven't shown that they're not willing to commit that crime again.
Conflict of interest.
Yeah, I think this is a ploy to just try to find more votes for the political criminal justice reformer people. I think that's all they're trying to do, is throw another bone out there to find more votes by allowing parolees, well, felon parolees.
Yeah, and when you look at who's bankrolling this, I mean, you've got the wife of the Netflix co-founder, Reed Hastings. She's funding it. You've got the ACLU of Northern California. I mean, they have a very clear interest in seeing this prop passed. But again, I say, what about the victims? And what about the victims' families? Because how do you think, as a mother, a woman would feel if her daughter were raped or murdered, and now the person who did that to her is treated like every other citizen and is allowed to vote on matters relating to criminal justice? That is incredibly insensitive. It's certainly not pro-woman. And I would think that
it says
I,
in
just,
the story,
I don't understand
too,
their line of thinking.
Melissa, that the Yes on 17 campaign would like to move this next to those still in jail getting the right to vote, which apparently happens in Maine and Vermont. That's apparently their next goal. This is incremental.
They don't have criminals in Maine and Vermont.
Not like we do.
Well, but you know that people incarcerated in our jails in California, they are allowed to vote because the legislature passed a bill. They found a loophole in the law, in the penal code, where it talks about, you know, who can vote, and it talks about those who are imprisoned not being allowed to vote. And they said, well, the people who are in jail, they're not imprisoned. They're in jail. So they found a loophole and they passed a bill. So now people in our county jails are allowed to vote from jail. That is happening now. So now they want to move it to the prisons as well for when they get released. And that's completely inappropriate.
That's a great place for ballot harvesters to
collect
a lot of votes.
And the bill also... Right. And the bill also allowed for interest groups to go into the jails to educate them on their voting rights. And I think you know what that means.
Yeah,
of course.
All right. Yeah. Melissa, thanks for coming on with us.
Yeah, well said. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right. State
thanks,
Senator
guys.
Melissa Melendez, the Republican from the Inland Empire, representing the no, which is John and Ken's position, no on Prop 17. Felon parolees in California should not be given the right to vote. It is just another grab at more votes so they can upend the entire criminal justice system.
And now, an update from the presidential race desk. Here's John and Ken.
Like a Swiss watch.
Mm.
Right. So precise.
There is really no further developments that we know of in the standoff between the Trump campaign and the Biden campaign about the next debate, scheduled 1 week from today in Miami, Florida, under some sort of a town hall format. The Commission on Presidential Debates announced early today that it was going to be virtual. Didn't take long for Trump to show up on the Fox News Business Channel and say he is not doing it. So we don't know whether or not there's going to be some deal reached or there's not going to be a next debate. I don't know.
Well, the doctors are quoted as saying this afternoon that he can go back out on the road starting Sunday.
Yeah, they said this weekend he should be good to go in terms of doing a rally, whatever he wants to do.
And I'm guessing he's got a test negative at least twice in a row, declared non-contagious, and if by Sunday that's the deal. Why can't they have it on Thursday? This is not complicated. You just need three microphones and two podiums, and you can put up those stupid plexiglass windows if you want.
Trump's campaign says, well, then just move the debate 1 week. If you want an extra week because you're concerned I'm not recovered from coronavirus, let's make it the 22nd or the 29th and the 22nd, the two debates that are left.
Biden said if Trump's not showing up, then he wasn't going to either.
That's what we heard. Well, I mean, what's the point of that?
Yeah, and there's no reason Biden has to agree to any of this. He's 10 points up. Trump's the one who needs to rectify that first debate performance.
Meanwhile, Trump's announced that if there's no debate, he'll do a rally instead next Thursday. And Biden's team said that he'll do some sort of a town hall appearance. For those who don't know, the announcement was already made that Trump will be doing, I think, the entire Rush Limbaugh radio show tomorrow. They're going to do a radio rally.
A virtual radio rally.
Yes. So I don't know if it's a whole show or just part of it. I mean, it's a three-hour show. I can't believe Trump's going to be on for 3 hours, but maybe.
Well, he's got the stamina.
I
radio's easy. Just, you know, you just sit there.
Biden and Harris, this is exciting, are doing a bus tour of Arizona.
Oh, my God. You know, it's 100 degrees and still in Arizona.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Biden does train tours. It's like he's running for president in 1928.
He thinks he's Harry Truman.
All right, so here comes an admission. I watched approximately 35 minutes of last night's debate. I really wasn't that interested.
It couldn't hold my interest. I tried watching the whole thing, and I just kept nodding off, trailing off. I'd start to read something.
No, I went and got some dinner. I watched the very beginning, and I went and got some dinner, and I came back, and I saw the fly on the head. I happened to tune in. That was near the end.
That fly on the head was funny, right? For the 2 minutes.
It was.
Awful is the next day, every person in the world has some stupid joke about it.
You don't
right?
have a meme yet?
Yeah, that. It's all that stuff. It's like everybody, and that's...
How about a song? They made a song out of it
it's
already.
It's a terrible thing about the internet, you know? It used to be something stupid happens, you turn on a couple of comedians that night, and it's done, right? Now, it's hundreds of millions of people, and none of them are funny. They're all stupid.
Doesn't that show you how boring it was, though, that the fly is the only thing people can talk about?
Well, he's a dud, all right? And she is just snarky and smarmy and just... Oh, by the way, there was one like stupid fake issue that he was being sexist for interrupting her.
Oh, yeah, I meant to mention that, too, because, you know, I thought about that when we just had our guest on the Yes on Proposition 17. And I did interrupt her asking about, you know, why should we allow murderers the ability to vote if they're on parole? She didn't say anything like that. But I thought, oh, no, I interrupted a woman.
All right.
It probably wasn't.
Honestly,
because I noticed a few minutes later, she said, can I have my chance to speak now?
Is that what? Oh, she was copying Kamala Harris.
I think so. It was when Kamala Harris were talking paused, and she said, "Our guest said, is it my turn? My space now?"
Yeah, Kamala Harris last night goes, "I'm speaking."
How come Trump kept interrupting Biden, that wasn't mentioned as?
Do you know between the two of them, they interrupted each other like 160 times. Men interrupt men all the time, and we put up with it. I don't know why. When a woman...
I thought women didn't want deferential treatment.
Yeah. They want equal treatment. That's equal treatment.
Do you mind if we interrupt you, Deborah Mark?
You guys do all the time, and I interrupt you, too.
Hold on.
Like I just did.
I'm just kidding.
Do you mind?
Not at all.
No.
I have fun with it. But I interrupt you all the time, Ken. It's just part of my personality, so I can't be hypocritical.
You're impatient, little...
I am.
She's the jumpy girl in the front row.
Can't wait to get to the next word, right?
I know. I know. It's a character flaw, I guess.
But I mean, if guys are interrupting guys all the time, then what's the problem? It seems hypocrisy. Guys don't treat other guys nicely.
They did this with the Hillary debate, too. It's the same thing. It's only when a man debates a woman, interrupting is sexist.
Is it just a tactic?
And that stupid term, mansplaining.
Is it just a tactic? Oh, that's banned. You can't use that. That's one of those stupid woke terms. Is that a tactic just to get a chance to call men another name? Or does it really bother them? And if it really bothers them, how come it doesn't bother guys to get interrupted all the time?
It's the double standard. Right.
Yeah, that's the double standard.
And when a woman interrupts a man, is that never sexist? I don't know.
Yeah, like that's never happened.
And what about Mike Pence's pink eye?
That was another fake issue. They tried to say he had COVID. You know who spread that rumor? Katie Couric, who's mostly out of work now. But she brought up the COVID theory. Famous newscasters spreading unsubstantiated bogus rumors. He had a burst blood vessel.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah.
I did notice there was something weird about his left eye, but I didn't know what was going on there.
You get old, your blood vessels start bursting. You want any time, Deborah? Well, you know, we'll give you 30 seconds here. Say whatever you want.
Oh, anything I want?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to go home tonight, and I'm going to make this great vegan meal.
Oh, for goodness sakes, that's enough.
That's enough. Off the stage.
Does it bother you when I interrupt you all the time?
No. I don't even notice.
It's what we do. People complain about the show because he and I are always interrupting each other.
It's meant to be chaos.
And I try to tell people, if I don't, he'll go on forever. He hates dead air.
That's true.
The thing about Pence, even though he's boring, they're describing him as like the yin to Trump's yang, because there was a few moments I did listen to. He does explain in more detail.
Yeah.
Better Trump's stance to say, like, on police.
Yes, he does.
He does. Well, he's
very meticulous and detailed. Yeah.
He's methodical, right?
You know exactly why he thinks what he thinks, even if you disagree with it. You know, he gives you the roadmap there, and you know, he has the statistics, and he has an orderly process to his brain where Trump just blurts things.
Whereas she was obviously rehearsed for this. She came out with her best punch about the coronavirus, and this is the worst administration in handling a crisis in the history. And then from there, just seemed to deflate because she's not a person.
No.
She's just this political construct.
Well, everybody got their civilized debate. Seriously. Wouldn't you rather watch Trump and Biden yelling at
each other? Didn't I predict that yesterday? Yeah. Well, the media would love a civilized debate.
Yeah,
although they still complained about him interrupting her.
I know. Well, because that's
their... And he went on too long.
Oh.
Many times he went past his allotted time, and that host kept...
Why,
Vice President Pence, you're past your time.
By the way, her questions sucked. They really did. Could we get
USA Today?
They should get rid of the moderators.
What are you expecting?
Just two guys on stage. Let them rip. Let them decide what they want to bring up. Let them counter each other. Let them punch each other. I don't care. But let it be natural and real. Pence dodged just about every question, and so did Harris. They both did. Nobody ever addressed the direct questions. They weren't followed up on. Waste of time. Waste of life.
All right,
I have another hour and a half less to live. John and Ken Show. John Cobalt, Ken Champeau, KFI AM 640. Live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
A final reminder, the Moist Line is tomorrow. Last call for calls for the week. 1-877-MOIST-86. 1-877-664-7886. The sports world still dealing with the coronavirus. The NFL now apparently is going to play a game on a Tuesday because they had an outbreak on one of the teams, the Tennessee Titans, and it just keeps rolling over into postponements. They have to figure out, well, you could make it up during a bye week, but they put the same bye week, so it gets complicated. So
yeah, I
looks
know,
like they're deciding to move a game to a Tuesday.
You can't do doubleheaders in football.
You can't do doubleheaders in football.
By the way.
And they're probably moving another game to have two games on Monday.
The NBA,
is what they did last week.
NBA is ditching the Black Lives Matter message on the courts for next year. And they're ditching all the social justice warrior slogans on the jerseys because the ratings for the NBA finals are down 68%.
Yeah, but they're also out of place. They don't happen in October, and I think people are... I heard the ratings for all sports are down. The NHL was down. Baseball's down a bit.
Yeah, well, Adam Silver, the commissioner.
And, of course, football.
Adam Silver, the commissioner, said, he goes, I understand the fans who tell me that they just want to watch the game to get away from everything.
Oh, I feel that way.
Yeah, so.
I mean, I don't mind the messages, but not when they go on all season and all these PSAs that are played in the middle and all these speeches.
No, it's constant lecturing. Guys. And I can't tell who the players are when they put slogans on their back. I can't remember everybody's name.
Kyle Smith with the National Review wrote a pretty good one about Joe Biden and the coronavirus, basically saying it's nice that Biden constantly with his talking points, and even Harris did it last night, this administration was the worst in handling the coronavirus crisis than any administration handling a crisis in history. But, you know, he asked the question to Biden is... what would you have done? What's the magic that you would have done that would have avoided crushing the economy and saved all the lives? Have you laid that out specifically to us? If you were president back in January when this thing first started becoming news from China, what would you have done differently from Trump that would have magically had us rolling with the economy like we were and very few deaths? What is that exactly?
He likened it to a seesaw. On one side, you've got the virus. The other side, you have the economy. You can't have both sides of the seesaw up in the air at the same time.
Not with lockdowns.
You know, if you decide to depress the economy, then the virus will get better. But when the economy goes in the tank, you got to open it up, and that'll increase the virus. And we've seen this over and over again. And he goes through the countries. France reopened its economy. They're having a second wave. Spain reopened the economy, second wave, record surges. Germany had 4,000 cases a day for the first time since April. Same thing happened
because
in
the virus is still out there.
Right. So if you open up the economy, people interact, which means you'll have more virus. There's no way around it. So
this is why Trump said we got to live with it. And people all were like, oh, my God, he could not have said that.
Well, that's the only – I don't think there is anybody who could have been president that would have changed anything because you had to keep the economy open. And besides that, it was the states and the governors who had the decision on how much they were going to open and close. A president can't do that. He's got no federal power.
Right.
People are so ignorant. Trump
and
or Biden
likes to say, it's a nationwide mask mandate. Well, that's not really, you can't do
that's,
that.
That's not legal. You can't do that. And nobody knows what the law is. The president is very limited in his powers over regulating individual states. That's up to the governor. I'm just...
It's more...
Who had the big plan? I don't see any of these guys had the big plan. And when you look into some of these Democratic-run states, what did they do?
And
they
I
had
still remember
massive outbreaks in the nursing homes.
Doing this show earlier this year when they announced the travel restrictions from China, I remember the Democrats all screaming that that was xenophobic.
It was racist.
Trump keeping out foreigners like he always does.
But, you know, that's why Trump needs to take a Xanax or something and calmly explain this in the next debate. Because that's what he should have done instead of, you know, waving his arms and yelling gibberish.
That's well, he does bring up that point every now and then about how they all told me I was xenophobic when I cut the flights from China. And there they go now. I should have done it sooner. All right. Time for Tim Conway.
Hey, now. Look at you guys. Ding dong with you 2 years.
Got any others?
Pretty light tonight. No, we've actually got a pretty good show tonight, all packed up, ready for you guys to go. Dr. Ray Kasheri on with us momentarily at 6.
Are you paying him? Because he's like a co-host now.
Yeah, you know what? So far he hasn't knocked on the door yet with his hand out.
He's got to be pretty bored. At,
throwing him an endorsement or something.
Yeah, I think he's getting close.
He's a powerful co-host.
He's great. He really is cool. And also, Petros is coming on with us later to talk about sports. Plus, Rich Little's coming on at 7 o'clock.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, he's really cool. Just starting off his career. And so we thought we'd give him a...
You thought you were going to give him a little break, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, he's great.
Yeah, he really
Something
is.
Something about impersonations? Or
Yeah, and he's and you know what? His impersonations are just getting better. They're not, you know, he's now doing like... You know, he's doing, what's his name, Biden, and he's doing some really cool ones. So we'll talk to him at 7 o'clock.
All right. That's exciting.
It's great.
Yeah. It's fantastic, man. You know, you got to give a kid every once in a start every once in a while.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You got to give a break.
John,
hey, by the way, real quickly, do you know how old he is? Take a guess.
I'm going to say
75?
Yeah. 75.
81.
I was going to say 80, but then I tamped it.
81, still working his ass off.
Yeah.
Ding dong!
Okay.
That's him doing
working
Matt
it
Money
on your
Smith.
Show.
Ding dong!
All right. Ding dong.
All right. Ding dong with you.
Ding dong. Gina Grant has the news. KFI AM 640.